Production. Recorded live.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities." Fellow Adamites, we are seeing the cracks emerge in Babylon. We are seeing the cracks spread. I don't believe it will be too long now before we hear Babylon the Great is fallen. And Yahweh willing, we shall all be there to witness it, and all the world shall bear witness to the power of Yahweh. If you have not begun to prepare for the things which are to come, the things which you're already starting to see happen, then you had best do so now. Now is the time to make preparations, gather supplies, make plans, and focus your efforts to keep on the straight and narrow path. Be right with the Heavenly Father, and he shall bring you through the plagues that await this doomed nation. Today is April 25th, 2010, Sunday, and Bill Fink is with us for the third installment of the Spanish Civil War. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hello. Praise Yahweh.
Absolutely. Praise Yahweh. So when last we left, we were reading from William Guy Carr, Pawns in the Game.
Yes, and it's an excellent source of information for the Spanish Civil War. And in what we read last week, we saw that the Soviets had in large part financed, and other out-of-the-country sources, had in large part financed the so-called socialists, and to me, socialist is just a euphemism for communist, or communist in denial, perhaps.
Well, what is it that they try and claim that everybody is basically either a socialist or a communist, and it's just terminology, and the socialists claim that, oh, we're not communists, we believe in a softer version of what Marx said, Stalin betrayed the revolution, blah, blah, blah. Well, the fact of the matter is that Stalin was a textbook communist, wasn't he?
Absolutely. In fact, Stalin was right and more radical than Marx himself.
And Stalin openly identified as a Marxist-Leninist, so they can play games with Trotsky as socialist, social democrat, you know, social democracy. It's all just communism. It's evil under a different name.
Exactly. It's communism, and communism is the political expression of Talmudism,
You know, you can buy Camel cigarettes or you can buy Camel Light, but it's all the same thing. It'll kill you just the same.
Absolutely, but it's basically Judaism forced on the masses so that the Jews can tear the masses' wealth from their fingers.
That's exactly what communism
and socialism are.
All these people who would never go to the synagogue because they don't care about Judaism or they're not religious, well, now they have a palatable version of Judaism that can be served up for them.
We've seen in 1931 that the Soviets and other outside of Spain Jewish sources and communist sources financed the liberal parties in the 1931 elections. And they would have never won without that. And the Bolsheviks within and communists, the hardcore communists within the socialist parties, which formed the republic government after the king left in 1931, well, we see that wasn't enough for the Bolsheviks. It wasn't enough for them to have a republic, which would be a democracy, which would function as a democracy. So immediately after 1931, they started building up to have a greater revolution. And they aimed on repeating what the Bolsheviks had done in Russia in 1917, there's no doubt. So where William Guy Carr, where we left off last week, we see that huge amounts of arms are being moved into the country by the Bolsheviks and the communists. So we have Franco, who was one of only two Spanish generals that didn't sign on, more or less, with the Republic. Well, we have Franco trying to reorganize the armed forces in the face of the Spanish police finding all of these weapons stashes all over Spain, which are being stashed by the Bolsheviks, and they are seeking a wider revolution. They're preparing for it.
That's why they brought on this very weak democratic republic, so they could undermine it and then bring out the full communist tyranny.
And it's the same thing they did in Russia. It's the same exact thing. Even here, they lobbied for 100 years to weaken our republic. I think it started in the 1800s with the Supreme Court decision that corporations could be people and have the rights inherent in people, in persons. That was a totally evil Supreme Court decision. And then second with the direct election of senators, which broke the control of the state house over its senators.
The state legislature was supposed to pick the U.S. Senate, and then they made it that direct election. That way they can influence the masses with the media.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And it's always, they always overturn the masses through the media. And the Jews have bought up the media in every country they've destroyed.
And that was the original intention of the founders, that there would be popular election of the House of Representatives, and that would be the people's voice, and the state's voice would be the U.S. Senate, picked by the state's legislature.
Well, I think, wasn't Lenin, wasn't he a newspaper man? Didn't he own Pravda? Wasn't that his newspaper?
That was either Lenin or Trotsky's paper, wasn't it?
Now, there was a huge liberal press operating in Russia, agitating the masses before the Kerensky government. Forced the Tsar out of a lot of his power, and there was a huge liberal press in Weimar Germany. There was a huge liberal press here, and owned by Jews. The same pattern all over again. And there was a huge liberal press owned by Jews in Spain. And in fact, the Catholic Church was urging people not to read it. That they were actually forbidding their parishioners not to read the liberal newspapers because they knew what was going to happen. That they knew that those newspapers were going to agitate the poor people and the working classes and win them over to the side of communism through the standard Bolshevik propaganda, that we could all be rich, that we could all be wealthy, that we could divide the wealth and we'd all have plenty.
That somehow you can divide a lot and everyone gets a lot. Well, it doesn't work that way. You know, I once told somebody that sharing is great. Communism looks great. If I'm going to put $100,000 in the pot, you put $2,000 in the pot and we split it down the middle. It's great for you, but it's bad for me since you've basically just stolen most of my wealth.
Well, that's what it boils down to. I mean, no. It's evil. It boils down to stealing is what it boils down to.
I had a friend who was a very poor guy, and he was a white nationalist, but then he got it in his head that white nationalism would actually require him to work to better his situation, and he didn't like the idea of having to work, so now he's a Marxist-Leninist.
Well, Hitler's socialism, his idea of socialism was to make sure that everybody had the opportunity to help himself.
Mm-hmm.
That is biblical. That is Christian.
I think it's the duty and the obligation of the government to either assure that every white man has a job or at least that every white man can get a job, whereas this present government and most recent governments have gone out of their way to make sure that white men cannot get jobs, or if they get them, they're crappy jobs flipping hamburgers. And Nico and I discussed
right.
it earlier that you can't support yourself on that kind of job, let alone a family. So they're doing everything they can to make sure young white men and young white women cannot hook up, start a family, and raise children.
Well, yes, they are, and they've stolen our wealth through a great amount of the wealth of the middle class in this country through social programs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the middle working class, and usually that's the white working class that the white business class that pays the burden.
They talk about, you know, Social Security withholdings and taxes. Well, for essential services, I was never consulted as to whether or not I wanted to enter into these programs or participate. If we're supposed to be a participatory republic, how come we're forced into all of these various programs, these entitlement programs? I want nothing to do with the Social Security system.
And it's, when it was founded, it was voluntary.
But that's how they always started. They started
still, quote,
it.
Quote, unquote, voluntary, actually.
It was supposed to be temporary and voluntary. And they said that our Social Security numbers would never be used to identify us.
Well, what it did is it destroyed the responsibility and the power of the local community and the local churches. It's the responsibility of the local community to see to its poor, to see to its widows. That's a Christian responsibility.
Mm.
And the government removed that from people. So the government has become, in many cases, I mean, for most of the people in this country, the government has become their god.
Well, they expect that the government's going to take care of them from cradle to grave, like we're Sweden.
Well, that's, you know, and that, it seems to work in a homogenous society because you're supposed to take care of your brother anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But now what's happening to Sweden? Now they're moving in the Africans. Now they're moving in the parasites.
They're 10% black and Arab, and the question is, though, even in a homogenous society, do you want the government having the kind of power where they can take 90% of your income and say that they're going to provide for you so you don't really need that income anyway? Wouldn't you rather be able to make your own decisions about what sort of health care you're going to purchase, where you're going to live, what kind of education you'll get?
Well, that's Christian. Christian community is 100% voluntary. And you can determine who is going to get, who you're going to bless with your excess.
Exactly. I mean, what if I feel compelled by somebody's story and I feel that they deserve my help, whereas someone else, I consider him a lazy slob and I don't want him being sustained and supported by the sweat of my labor? The government,
well, exactly.
They take our money and they issue it the checks.
But in forced government socialism, the sexual deviants, the aliens of other races, they all share in your wealth equally, and that's evil. And that's basically the difference between Christian community and communism.
In socialism, the decisions as to who will be the benefactor of charity are government bureaucrats, and they don't really care if
exactly.
And if you're Tyrone, who has 10 children, and you need charity because you refuse to work, or if you're a widow who has to take care of several grandchildren because your children died in a car accident, and now you're the caregiver for these children, and your husband's dead, so you're a widow having to feed 3 or 4 children, and you just can't make it.
What we've seen is the Jew become the de facto owner of our wealth, the de facto mm-hmm. controller of our wealth, because he is the bureaucrat. In many cases, he is the bureaucrat, and his banks are controlling the bureaucrats, whether they're Jews or not. But that's what it's boiled down to.
Absolutely.
It's been a way for Judaism to remove wealth from the Goyim nations.
And they're talking about moving towards a cashless society. That's because they know a lot of people. They estimate in this country 30% of all economic activity is, quote, off the grid. You know,
despise cash.
Well, if you're
because
a lawn...
they can't track it. And they have to track every little transaction.
If
they have to get
their
grubby little hands on a chunk of every little transaction.
Day labor, lawn care, that kind of stuff, that's cash and carry. You just get paid every day and you declare whatever you feel like.
Well, there's a lot more than that that's cash and carry. You know, there's a lot of cash industries in this country.
And they have in Argentina now, I believe, a system where everyone has to carry around a little calculator, almost like a personal data assistant thing, and you swipe a card every time you want a transaction to go through, and they said that they want it implemented even at the level of a farmer's market. That way every tomato will be accounted for.
Absolutely. Yeah, they can't stand that. Yeah, they hate the independent farmer more than anybody because they have no control over what grows out of the ground, and they have no control over that farmer selling it to anybody, and they can't.
Absolutely.
They can't track every transaction.
Well, that's why they hate farming, and that's why they're going after the farmers all around the world, because they want to use hunger as a weapon, and they know that farmers will sell food to whoever wants to buy it. Farmers aren't going to say, oh, well, I'm not going to bring my food to the market in this area because they're being starved as part of an NKVD purge. They'll sell the food to whoever needs it. And in fact, in some instances, farmers may give it away if people are starving.
Well, I know that this year and this past year in area where I live, many, many farms have not paid their taxes.
Mm.
That they can't, they're really being squeezed.
Well, that's another question. How can a farmer owe taxes? He doesn't have an income. He just grows things out of the ground. He's literally almost producing something out of nothing, aside from the fact that he put seeds into the ground, so it's not really coming out of nothing, but he's basically bringing something into existence whereas it didn't exist before. He already paid for the land at the time of the purchase. Why does he have to pay an annual fee to the government to continue using land that he already has paid for?
Well, right. That's the worst tax is the property tax.
I mean, basically, you're just renting it from the government. And I give the analogy that a mafia boss comes into the neighborhood and says, if you want to keep operating in this neighborhood, you got to pay me every month or you're on the way out. They'll find you floating in the river, and the government says you got to pay us every month or every year, whatever it is. And if you don't, the sheriff will kick your door down, you'll go to prison, and we'll sell your property. Well, how can the government sell something that doesn't belong to them? That raises the fundamental question. Do we really have private property in this country anymore?
No, but that's the Communist Manifesto. We are a communist country.
Mm-hmm.
America has become, through the slow socialization of this nation, we've become a communist nation.
And most people don't believe that, and they don't want to hear it. The Tea Party people, they say, Obama's going to make us a socialist country. I almost want to grab them, shake them, and scream, wake up, where have you been for the last 80 years?
Well, right. And anybody that denies we're a communist country, show them that Communist Manifesto. They're just kidding themselves.
We've fulfilled every plank.
We are a communist nation.
We have fulfilled every plank of the communist platform, haven't we?
Every single plank. I live in a two-bedroom brick ranch on a half acre that my parents paid $75,000 for 7 years ago, and it's a nice house, but the tax bill is $5,200 a year, the tax burden. That's incredible.
So in 10 years you could almost buy another house.
Absolutely, in 15 years we paid for that, the value of the house in taxes.
So whose house is it really?
It's their house. It's crazy. This is a communist nation.
And people say, well, we need those taxes to pay for schools.
I don't know where the money goes. That they spend more money here per pupil in school than we do anywhere else in the world, and these kids are retarded.
Mm-hmm.
The schools are basically, they become a welfare program for the in crowd in the political scene. Because they all have school jobs.
Absolutely. It's basically just a way for them to give jobs to losers that didn't know what they wanted to do with their lives. I've talked to a lot of people in college. I asked them, what do you want to do? And they said, well, if I can't get into medical school or if I can't get into law school, I'll just go teach. It's basically the last stop for those who can't do anything. I consider them basically high-powered babysitters or glorified babysitters with a nice little title.
Well, that's true in a lot of ways also. There's more school buses. I don't, it's incredible the number of school buses in this town of 8,000 people.
And you wonder, most of those kids, would it kill them to get a little exercise and walk to school?
30 school buses pull away from the school every afternoon. It's just unreal. There's a lot of bloat, and there is. It's a huge economic and jobs program for the county or the state or whatever.
We took the same road to communism that Britain and France took, wouldn't you say, that most of the Western parliamentarian democracies took, as opposed to the traditional agrarian monarchistic societies where they had violent upheavals and revolutions and a total overthrow of the existing order basically overnight. We took the 8-decade-long path.
Well, yes, we did.
We never had a Franco. We never had a Mussolini. We never had a Hitler.
We're there. I mean, this healthcare thing is basically the last straw. We're an absolute communist nation, politically and economically. The only thing that we're missing is that about 80 million Americans still have guns.
And they have yet to kill off, you know, a third of our country.
80 million of those guns are useless because they don't do a damn thing with them. It's incredible that they just keep forking over 50-60% of their earnings to the government every year.
If the White Army had that kind of firepower, there wouldn't have been a Soviet Union, would there?
No, if the Russian populace was armed like the American populace was armed, there would have never been a Soviet Union. But there's a Soviet Union here, that's for sure.
In fact, if the Russian populace had this kind of armament, Trotsky and Lenin, they would have been dead in a few months after starting their revolution, wouldn't they?
Well, that's, you know, another good book is None Dare Call a Conspiracy. And it's happened. It's over with. Here we are, communist America. I mean, we've been here for a while. I don't know when you want to consider a nation communist. When it's 6 of the planks of the Communist Manifesto are fulfilled? How about 7? Okay, how about 8? Are we communist yet? Now with universal health care on, I mean, it's about over with for this nation. We're a communist nation.
Absolutely, and I think the only thing we're really lacking is an a dedicated internal security apparatus that operates as a secret police force. But we essentially have that. They can just come into your house at night, throw a hood over your head, and drag you off to Guantanamo or God knows where.
Right. And it's not even that you know, that people should rise up against the government to do something about it. It's just that people should admit it. That would be a huge step in repairing it. I mean, even Alcoholics Anonymous teaches that unless you confront your alcoholism, you can't defeat it.
The Americans are in big need of an intervention, aren't they? It seems that they want to delude themselves to think we're the greatest nation on earth, we're the most blessed nation, and I say that we're a communist country, no different from China, except we don't have gulags.
Well, they keep shouting that we're free, but they don't understand that the Jewish idea of freedom is absolute sexual promiscuity.
The Jewish idea of freedom is freedom to be a pervert.
So when you define freedom in Jewish terms, yes, we're a free country because we're a bunch of perverts. This is a whole nation of sexually deviant people.
You're free to have sex with any creature, any person, anything, or any object that you desire. The Jews call that freedom, and they laud that as the highest virtue in humanity.
Right. It's omnisexual. They're omnisexual beasts. And when you have freedom when you have sex with another man, it's called homosexuality. And when you have sex with a goat, it's called art. That's the Jewish mind.
You know, there was a person not too far from where I live that was arrested because he was having relations with a picnic table hole, the hole in the picnic table. And I'm guessing he was probably a Jew.
Well, the freedom that this country was founded upon was an economic freedom, freedom from government tyranny. And freedom from the very taxes that we have today.
And freedom to defend your land and your livelihood, and we don't have that anymore. That's been taken away and given to the police. If somebody's killing your livestock, you're expected to stand by and watch and call the police and let other people who don't have a vested stake and interest in your property come defend your property.
In most states, that's true.
Whereas in any rational, sane society, if I look outside and somebody's in my field killing my cows, well, I'm just going to reach over, get my rifle, and boom. Kill them, and then I'm going to go back to sleep.
Well, let's get started with William Guy Carr here, because we could rhetoric forever, but it doesn't cure anything. General Franco made a desperate effort to try to reorganize the Spanish army and put an end to the anarchy that was being perpetrated by the Bolsheviks. And the
anarchy was by design, absolutely, as we've already discussed. That's their modus operandi. A Republican Democratic government that's very weak plunge the nation into anarchy, and communism comes in the aftermath.
That's their hope, communist totalitarianism. But he obtained little support from government authorities. To indicate how well the communist underground was organized, over 300 churches, this is during the Republic, this is 3 years before the Civil War begins, over 300 churches were set afire at exactly the same time in 100 different cities and towns. Sounds to me like a coincidence.
Yeah, that sounds like an absolute coincidence. We shouldn't send anybody to investigate that. And if that happened in this country, it wouldn't be a hate crime, would it?
The assassination of individuals that the revolutionaries wanted removed became so common that, quote-unquote, professional pistoleros became competitive. It was possible to have an enemy liquidated for 50 pesetas, a little more than $5 American money. The Moscow agents used the confused conditions existing in Spain to carry out Lenin's mandate. Quote, the communist legal code is to base terrorism on fundamental principles, unquote. Torture, mutilation, rape, burnings, bloodshed, and death were the methods by which communism tried to obtain power. Conditions deteriorated from bad to worse. By the beginning of 1936, the whole country was in a state of turmoil. President Alcalá Zamora dissolved the Cortes, or the Spanish Parliament. February 16th was set as the date for a general election. Gil Robles and Calvin Sotelo stamped the country on a straight anti-communist ticket. Bolshevik election propaganda was issued by the Friends of Russia. Largo Caballero was in prison at this time for the part he played in a revolutionary uprising.
Oh, and about Sotelo, before we go on, he was assassinated later that year. He was the leader of the opposition, and he was killed by members of the Popular Front.
That's no surprise. Largo Caballero was in prison at the time for the part he had played in a revolutionary uprising. He was interviewed by Mr. Edward Knobloch, who afterwards wrote Correspondent in Spain. Caballero said, "We will win at least 265 seats. The whole existing orders will be overturned. Azana will play Kerensky to my Lenin. Within 5 years, the Republic will be so organized that it will be easy for my party to use it as a stepping stone to our objective, totalitarian communism. A union of the Iberian republics, that is our aim. The Iberian Peninsula will again be one country," which it never was historically, as far as I remember.
Absolutely not.
"Portugal will come in peaceably, we hope, but by force if necessary. You see behind these bars the future ruler of Spain. Lenin declared Spain would be the second Soviet republic in Europe. Lenin's prophecy will come true. I shall be the second Lenin who shall make it come true." There you go. I think Caballero, I think that means cowboy in Spanish too, and he bragged like one. "After the most completely dishonest election Spain ever endured..."
Oh, Caballero means knight.
It means knight? Okay. He sounds more like a cowboy. He must be a Jew. "After the most completely dishonest election Spain ever endured, President Zamora wrote, 'The Popular Front was hoisted into power on the 16th of February, thanks to an electoral system as absurd as it is unfair, which gives an extraordinary advantage to a relative majority, though absolutely it may be a minority.'" Sounds like the Electoral College here, huh? "Thus, in a certain constituency, the Popular Front, with 30,000 votes less than the opposition, was nevertheless able to win 10 seats out of 13. Though in no part of the constituency did the number of votes exceed those of its major adversary by more than 2%.
Sounds like, what do they call it, gerrymandering?
Yes, absolutely. "Paradoxical cases of this kind were fairly common. In spite of the illegal means employed, first count only gave the Popular Front 200 seats out of a possible 465. Thus, it became the largest minority group in the parliament, but did not have enough seats to form a government. The next move was for the Popular Front members to join forces with the Basque and other minority groups." And that's what the socialists and the communists always do, that they get the minorities lined up with them. "They elected a committee to verify the election returns in each constituency. They made sure the final returns were favorable to the Popular Front Party. In several cases, rightist candidates were disqualified and Popular Front candidates were elected as deputies in their place. When the fixing was all over, the Popular Front had 265 seats Caballero predicted they would have, but even after all this happened, the final breakdown of the vote showed. For the center and right parties, 4.91 million. For the Popular Front, 4.35 million. The right-center majority of the vote was 554,000 votes. It must be understood that Popular Front candidates elected to the Spanish Cortes represented every kind of individual, from the very mild socialist to the dyed-in-the-wool Bolshevik." Well, the very mild socialist usually works out to be just a whore for the dyed-in-the-wool Bolshevik. The Stalinites, and that can be demonstrated today with the Blue Dog Democrats and Nancy Pelosi. The Stalinites created so much chaos that hellish conditions broke out all over Spain. Previous to the February elections in 1936, the governmental record in Spain was as follows. From the end of the Primo de Rivera dictatorship, in 1931, there had been one revolution with 2,500 persons killed, 7 revolts, 9,000 strikes, 5 prorogations of the budget, 2 billion pesetas increase in charges, 1,000 municipalities suspended, 114 newspapers forbidden, 2.5 years of states of exception, which are equivalent to our state of martial law. After 6 weeks of Popular Front government under Azana, Caballero, and Prieto, the record read thusly: assaults and robberies at political headquarters, 58, at public and private establishments, 105. At churches, 36. Fires, at political headquarters, 12. At public and private establishments, 60. In churches, 106. Disturbances, general strikes, 11. Risings and revolts, 169. Persons killed, 76. Wounded, 346. So a disproportionate number of fires, assaults, and robberies happen in churches.
Sounds like the ARA.
It's definitely the ARA. It's exactly what they do. The Jews have been doing it for years. They've been doing it for millennia.
They always incite the youth to rise up with senseless violence that they don't understand the reasoning behind. They get these kids thinking that they're defending freedom and stopping tyranny, but they don't really understand that they're just supporting different sorts of tyrants. They don't know they're being used as pawns.
Exactly. Caballero, speaking at Zaragoza, said, Spain must be destroyed in order to remake it ours. On the day of vengeance, we will leave not a stone upon a stone. Biblical, huh?
What is the day of vengeance? Is that a Jewish thing?
Well, I guess it's a Christian thing, but the Jews try to expropriate it. Caballero also declared, before the elections, we ask for what we want. After the elections, we will take what we want by any means. The right must not expect mercy from the workers. We shall not again. Now, I never seen Jewish workers. I'm sorry. We shall not again spare the lives of our enemies. Azana declared happily, Spain has ceased to be Catholic. So it's all about Judaism versus Catholicism. That's what this is all about.
People need to understand that it's a race war and a religious war.
Exactly. And people, because they express it in political means, everybody's fooled into thinking that it's a philosophical war.
Or it's the poor guy versus the rich guy.
Communist leader Margarita Nelkin announced, we demand a revolution, but even the Russian kind will not serve us. We need flames that can be seen throughout the planet and waves of blood that will redden the seas. Now, that sounds like it's straight from the Talmud.
I'm going to look her name up and see what her birth name was.
Her last name is Nelkin, N-E-L-K-E-N. That's certainly
okay.
She
was born Margarita Nelkin Monsberger.
Well, that kind of betrays her. I think she might be Jewish.
She was born in Spain, though, but with the maiden name Monsberger. That's not a Spanish last name.
It's not a Spanish name.
And I'm reading the article. It's in Spanish, so it's hard for me to read all of it. But she ended up dying in Mexico. She was active as a feminist and a socialist international communist.
The Times correspondent reported conditions in Barcelona. In February 1936, he said, a vigilance committee warned a number of high officials on February 20th to relinquish their posts. The committee was obeyed. A vigilance committee. A month later, he wrote, that's like a bunch of thugs getting together and calling themselves a vigilance committee, right? A month later, he wrote, the dictatorship of the proletariat is now the open aim of all the Reds. A little later, he wrote, Spanish socialism has been drifting towards communism. Well, isn't that the obvious everywhere? It is among the younger generation that Marx and Lenin have gained most of their disciples. The ones that love to hear those romantic phrases like liberty, fraternity, equality.
Peace, land, and bread.
These young people believe that the conquest of power is the immediate requirement of Spanish socialism. Violence, the ultimate means of getting it, and the dictatorship of the proletariat, the only way to retain it. It's the ARA and the Antifa. The subversive doctrine is preached untiringly. In March 1936, he reported, deputies in the Cortes, the Spanish parliament, with clenched fists in communist salute, sang the Soviet national anthem, Le Internationale, in the house itself. Now this isn't really a... I don't think that Franco started the Civil War here. I think he is actually trying to reverse a government takeover by Bolsheviks. That's what
he's trying to restore order and sanity to an insane country.
Why did the youth of Spain turning great numbers to communism. It's a technique used by those who direct the WRM is to be understood. The answer must be found because it is from the laboring classes and the youth of the nation that the revolutionary leaders draw their shock troops. Just like America today, it's going to happen again. Investigation reveals that Azana represented himself as an intellectual with a sincere belief in socialism. Well, that's how the Republic was represented in the entire Western press.
Mm-hmm.
He was openly anti-religious. And wherever we see Jewish communists, we see openly anti-religious people.
Ooh, and the next line, too, he claimed that he wasn't in agreement with the terrorism carried out by the radicals. Isn't that what they always say?
That's what they always say. The ADL will denounce terrorism, and they'll even denounce their own if they have to, simply as a ploy when they're the ones funding the Antifa and the ARA.
They'll denounce the Jewish Defense League, saying they're too radical, they shouldn't be setting off bombs, they shouldn't be shooting people, they shouldn't be burning down churches and homes, they shouldn't issue threats. But where do they get their money from? Where do they get the intelligence documents? Who tells them go after those people?
Investigation reveals that Azana represented himself as an intellectual with a sincere belief in socialism. He was openly anti-religious. And note that the entire ACLU here and all the anti-religious people, all the atheists, wherever you find an atheist league and anti-religious people, you find Jews. Scratch the surface, you find Jews every single time. Scratch an atheist and you'll find a Jew. He protested, however, that he was not in agreement with the terrorism advocated and carried out by the anarchists and the communists. The public face, and just what the ADL does today. Once he obtained the necessary political power, however, he used it to have the Republican government abolish religious teaching orders from the schools. He engaged Francisco Ferrer to establish secularism in the schools. Instead of opening the school day with a prayer to the Almighty God, the new secular teachers opened the classes by having the pupils sing, "We are the sons of the revolution. We are the sons of liberty. With us comes the dawning, O Lucifer, of a new humanity." O Lucifer is an addition on my part. I'm sorry.
So they claim they don't want to force religion on anyone, but they have no problem forcing atheism on people.
Well, right, and atheism is a religion, and that's exactly what they've done. And if you look, whether or not we agree with the way religion's taught in this country, when you look at the removal of prayer from our schools and the removal of religion from public life in this country, you see the socialist, communist, Bolshevik Jews behind it everywhere.
Absolutely. Yes. And in its absence, you have a belief in nothing.
It's absolutely amazing that the average person falls for the media language. Oh, he's an atheist, as if that's legitimate. No, he's a Jew. He's a Jew devil. He's not an atheist. He's a Jew devil, period. He's antithetical to everything Christian. And we've seen it in Russia, and we've seen it in Spain, but because most of this country is illiterate, we don't see it here. And anybody that thinks that most of the people in this country are literate are out of their minds. 90% of the people in America are illiterate. They don't read.
You know, through Wikipedia, they identify Trotsky as a Russian atheist.
Well, absolutely. He's a Jew. That's what an atheist is. It's everything contrary to God. A translation of another hymn sung at the beginning and end of class periods in Barcelona schools is as follows. Sling the bomb, place well the mine, grasp firm the pistol, pass on the word of the revolution, help for the anarchists, stand to arms till death, with petrol and dynamite, destroy the government.
Now I imagine once the government's communist, they change the nature of the hymns.
I'm sure. Once they'll ban this in a minute. And they'll even kill their fellow Jew, the guy that wrote it. He was just their whore anyway for a night or two. The news editors of British and American papers refused to publish the truth because it sounded so fantastic. No, it didn't. I can't agree there. Because they were Jews, all working for Jews. That's why they refused to publish the truth. The Jewish-run American media painted a beautiful picture of communism and Bolshevism for many decades, and treated these people as they were entirely legitimate politicians and legitimate social theorists, when in fact they were nothing but Jew devils and common street thugs.
Well, wasn't Stalin, he was just a bank robber from Georgia. That's how he financed his movement, robbing banks.
He was a train robber. The most damning evidence proving the systematic method used to subvert and pervert youth into becoming revolutionaries was supplied by Francisco Ferrer himself. In a letter to a revolutionary comrade, he wrote, "In order not to scare people and give the government, Republican government, a pretext for closing down my establishments, I call them modern schools and not schools for anarchists." So in New York City, we have the new school. "My wish is to bring about the revolution. For the time being, however, one must be content to implant the idea of violent upheaval in the minds of the young." So in America, we have Bill Ayers teaching children. "They must learn that against the police and the clergy, there is only one means of action, bombs and poison." When Ferrer was captured by Franco's forces during the Civil War, he was tried as a traitor to Spain. The above letter was used as evidence. He was found guilty and executed. The High Council of the Grand Orient of Paris protested to Masonic lodges all over the world, claiming that Ferrer had been murdered because of his anti-Catholic activities.
He was murdered for advocating conspiracy and agitation and terrorism.
Absolutely. But they, outside of Spain, the Jewish press will tell a whole an entirely different story about it.
So is this just a repeat of the earlier French Revolution with Jews and Masons allying together and working in unity to destroy a traditional agrarian monarchistic society?
Well, it was the Masonic lodges that the Jews used. I mean, all the way back from Adam Weishaupt, 1776, the Illuminati, the first thing they did was they infiltrated the Masonic lodges. And I'm not saying that the Masonic lodges were first organized for good purposes in the first place. But they were infiltrated by Jewish Illuminists from the 18th century.
And that took a bit longer in this country for them to take over American Masonry.
Well, right. These radical Bolsheviks types, that these radical anti-Christian Jews, that they it probably took them 150 years. I would think they probably didn't have full control of Masonry in this country until the 20th century. I might be wrong, but I see it as a creeping a couple of lodges or a lodge at a time thing for them to get their claws on all of Masonry. I read this extensive biography, and it's an excellent book, and it's extremely well documented. Of Benjamin Franklin, written by Carl Van Doren in the 1930s, and Benjamin Franklin was the top dog in a Masonic lodge in France.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right around the time of the French Revolution, you know, he was the ambassador to France during the American Civil War. During the American Revolutionary War, Franklin was in France. He was petitioning the French government for economic assistance in its war against the British. And he was the Grand Master of the Neuf-Sœurs, I'm probably destroying that pronunciation, the Nine Sisters Lodge in France.
Mm.
But he knew nothing, you know, nothing was revealed concerning the French Revolution or any anti-government tendencies or anything like that by Franklin. And the Masonic the Masonic Lodge that the Revolution was launched out of was not the Nine Sisters Lodge, and it was the Grand Orient Lodge. So that's just an example. I think that Franklin was probably ignorant of all of that, and that's an example of the compartmentalization or the independence of the various Masonic lodges at the time. Not all Masons were equally evil at any given time is basically what I'm trying to say.
But as an organization, Masonry is not helping the white race It's not serving Yahweh. We don't really know exactly who it's serving.
No, it seems to be Satan worship to me. It seems to be Kabbalistic ritual that's given a secular image. And it fulfills, yeah, you know, ultimately, especially now, it ultimately fulfills an evil political purpose. I have no doubt about that now. But I don't think the Masonic lodges that the founding patriots of this nation belong to were of that ilk. I don't believe they were. Well, we'll talk more about the Masons another time. I don't believe that the there's a story that the Masons derived from the Knights Templar, yes. That's the common tale. Okay. Children up to teenage years are taught to rebel against the discipline of the home, just like we saw in America in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. Whenever you see that, you'll know the Jews are in charge. Parents are represented to their children as old-fashioned. Whenever you see that, you'll know the Jews are in charge. So we saw it in America in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Oh, did you miss the paragraph on investigation into the youth training program?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did. Let me back up. Investigation into the youth training program revealed the methods used to corrupt the morals of the youth of a nation also. Lenin had said, the best revolutionary is a youth devoid of morals. So we see the programming of our youth in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and today.
I thought that was incredibly important for us to get that out there.
His word being law in communist organizations, meaning Lenin's word, all members work secretly to make young people of both sexes antisocial and immoral, which is exactly what we've seen the last 50 years in America.
Well, they want a blank slate society, basically a blank slate youth, so they can fill up the slate with whatever they want.
Well, exactly. That's why our schools are about teaching children what to think and not how to think.
You know, children are basically, they don't know the capital of the state they live in, but they know how to engage in sodomy because they learned about it in sex ed.
Children up to teenage years are taught to rebel against the discipline of the home. Parents are represented to their children as old-fashioned. Parental authority is scoffed at, as it is in communist America today. The subverters argue that parents have lied to their children since they were old enough to listen regarding Santa Claus and where babies come from. And that's exactly arguments I've heard from Jewish sociologists in the 70s and 80s.
That's ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous. The subversives claim parents are the victims of reactionary teachings and capitalistic exploitation. The child is encouraged to educate the parents in regard to modern and progressive ideas, which I've seen my own children have this same exact attitude. My daughter had the same exact attitude and rebelled from me while I was in prison. And if she was standing in front of me and had that attitude, she'd have probably been horizontal real quick.
They're basically encouraging children to take the propaganda home to their families.
And that's exactly that. That's exactly what's going on. And it happened in this country from the 1950s forward. They are warned that, for their own good, they must refuse to be dominated or disciplined by their parents. The purpose of this subversive campaign is to destroy the sanctity and unity of the home, which is the foundation upon which our civilization is founded. And that is a plaque and a plank in the basically the Communist Manifesto, and it's in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, that the Jew, that Satan would destroy our family. That's the building brick of Western Christian civilization, and that's where they started. That's their primary target. And we read over and over again in the Russia number one report and related literature, when we read that a couple of months ago, that the Jewish aim to destroy the bourgeois family. To rob children of their respect for the ministers of religion, the subversives first represent them as being chosen from the less intelligent or physically retarded members of families. They are ridiculed as spineless holy Joes, womanish do-gooders, and servants of the ruling classes. Quoting from Marx, children are told, "Religion is the opium of the people because it teaches acceptance of poverty, sickness, and hard work as good for the soul." And again, I can testify that I saw this countless times growing up in my youth in the 60s, 70s, 80s. The Christian child is poisoned, here in communist America. The Christian child is poisoned against the ministers of his religion by being told the most fantastic slanders against them in connection with their private lives. They are presented as sheep in wolf's clothing, as black crows feeding upon the gullibility of the parishioners. Well, to a great extent, that's true, but that doesn't mean that we should tear our society down over it. If, as often happens, a minister or priest does become involved in a scandal, it is played up for all it is worth. And that's also true, because we see the Catholic Church, time after time, dragged through the mud because its priests tend to molest young boys.
Well, I mean, if we considered how many rabbis are pedophiles?
There were 50 or 60 rabbis last year in New York City that were involved in sex scandals with young boys, and none of it was ever in the newspapers. It was never headlined.
They're not going to try and destroy the institutionalized synagogue over that, are they?
But they've destroyed the institutionalized church over it, and they've done so with glee. That's the hypocrisy of the Jew. I mean, it's every single facet of the diamond has a big H written on it.
And I have to wonder if a lot of those priests, so-called Catholics that were touching boys, if many of them weren't actually Jews that joined the church to undermine it, since the protocols talk about doing that.
The Christian religion is ridiculed in the most nauseating manner, which we see day in and day out today here in America. Christ is represented as the illegitimate son of Mary, a young Jewess, who, in order to save face, hoaxed Joseph into believing that she had been conceived by the Holy Ghost, which I've heard today. Christ as an adult is depicted as a faker. His miracles are said to be illusions, cleverly performed as magicians perform them today. The 12 apostles are said to have been his accomplices. The so-called comic Mandrake the Magician is often used to illustrate how a hypnotist and magician can fool the public. Well, we have that over and over now with television. It's incredible. The Jew has set up television to decimate our culture, which is exactly how he's used it. One favorite story told Christian children is that Christ was a bootlegger at a very early age. That's a favorite Jewish occupation, too. Subversives claim he pretended to work a miracle at the marriage feast of Cana in order to sell his bootleg wine.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Well, you know, wine wasn't illegal in old Rome, so how could he be a bootlegger?
Mm-hmm.
They even accused Christ and all Roman Catholics of being cannibals. Now let me say that accusation has been since the first century, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
They support their argument, and that's because the Jew can't understand the, if you will eat of my body discourse that Christ gave in John chapter 6. They support their arguments with the biblical quotation that Christ admonished his followers, unless they ate his flesh and drank his blood, they could not have eternal life. And that's been an argument of the Jew since the day that Christ died on the cross. And that's in, you know, all the early Christian fathers write about that. Tertullian and Irenaeus, and they all write about that, about the Jew accusing them of being cannibals. Teenage youths are introduced to companions who teach them liberalism, which is soon turned to licentiousness. It always does. They are taught the anarchist conception of life. The less laws, the better. Do as you like. This sounds like the 60s, huh? According to subversive teachers, there is only one sin, and that is disobedience to orders given by authorized leaders. There are only two crimes, neglect of duty and betrayal of party secrets. The next step is to lead antisocial youth into actual conflict with the police, as we see happen with the ARA all the time and the Antifa all the time. They start them off by linking them up with some gang. Young communist leaders egg the other members on. They dare them do the things outside the law. They force them into fights to prove their physical courage. They inveigle them into petty crime and then lead them deeper into the jungle of the communist organized underworld. The publication of crime and sex comics is part of the communist psychological warfare and the jewel cry that you're burning his books. These comics are calculated to awaken in children hidden and suppressed sadistic tendencies and to weaken the moral armor of children who are otherwise normal. And that's why we have such a large percentage of homosexuals today.
And a whole lot of violent criminals. It seems that now we have more violent offenders than in any period ever in our history.
Any professor who claims sex, crime and sex comics do not influence children in the way the Illuminati wants them to go is either a fool or a knave. So you could write off the whole U.S. Congress, but we all knew that. Toy guns, soldiers, revolvers, movies with plenty of crime and shooting are all calculated to break down the finer feelings of normal Christian children and acclimatize them to the use of weapons, scenes of violence, and sudden death. It's a good thing William Guy Carr didn't see the video games they have today. He'd have just hung himself. it's greatly, greatly magnified over what he saw in the 1930s and 40s. Pornographic books and magazines are circulated profusely at low prices because such literature is calculated to destroy the thin veneer of virtue and respectability which civilized Christian moral codes have caused us to develop. And that's the real aim of the Jew, is to destroy civilized Christian moral codes. Few people realize that the important part modern movies play in subverting youths away from their homes, their country, and their religion. And he wrote this this was published in 1950. Imagine if he saw some of those movies today. Many movies show an hour of film in which the criminals and bad men and women do everything that is forbidden by our laws and moral code and devote 1 minute during which the law catches up with them or they die because of their sins. Films taken of actual fighting during the Mexican Revolution of 1913 were shown in Galveston, Texas. The sight of seeing men killed in battle or being dragged from their homes and slaughtered by revolutionaries caused women to scream and faint and men to vomit. Public opinion caused the showings to be prohibited. Today, these scenes are shown on films advertised as children's special for Saturday afternoon performances. That is just one illustration of how the general public, and particularly the children, have been systematically hardened to accept the sight of violence and bloody death as normal. It supports the revolutionary model that much-needed reforms can only be brought about speedily by revolutionary action.
Well, you know, you've seen the pictures of the South African farm attacks, right?
Yes.
Well, when I first saw them, about 15, I broke down and I was crying, and I came close to vomiting over it. But some people, I showed it to one kid in my high school, a Marxist-Leninist, and he just laughed about it and said that boys deserve to be raped.
Well, of course he did. And that's the typical Jewish reaction to those things.
He wasn't a Jew, though.
Well, he may have been. I mean, you don't... you can't often tell the wheat from the tares. But our children today, this is far beyond anything. William Guy Carr, he's complaining about the Hollywood propaganda and pornography of his time. Imagine if he'd see the internet and what goes on YouTube. And I don't want to think about what goes on some of those sex sites. I don't visit them, but I'm sure it's pretty bad. And if he saw that, I don't know what he'd think, because The 50s and the 40s and 50s pornography and Hollywood violence is pretty innocuous compared to what we have today.
And we have the Jews to thank for all of it.
Yes, we do. Do you want to pick it up with page 141?
All right. In every country not subjugated to date, the directors of the World Revolutionary Movement have set up private film agencies which supply the most obscene pictures imaginable for presentation to private parties. These films illustrate every form of sexual depravity known to man. They are used for the purpose of demoralizing... I'm sorry, something's going on in the other room, I'm sorry. They are used for the purpose of demoralizing youth so they can be recruited into revolutionary organizations. This statement is proved by the fact that the laws barring them in the USSR are strictly enforced. Youths who prove themselves to be antisocial, anti-religious, hardened, and brutalized are sent to Moscow and taught revolutionary warfare and the art of street fighting. This is a different course from that given prospective labor leaders and intellectuals. And this is exactly what they did in the 50s and 60s with all the blacks in Africa. They told them, you can go to college and get a degree. The people in Moscow will pay your way. Then you can go back to South Africa, or you can go back to the Congo, and you'll be a leader, and one day you'll be in the UN, and you'll have a nice cushy job. They took these people, put them on a boat or a plane, sent them to Moscow or China or Romania, and the next thing you know, they're in a communist training camp being taught to hate whitey. They didn't really know what they were getting themselves into. Revolutionary psychological warfare is accomplishing its purpose in the Western world as it did in Spain. This is proved by the fact that no person loses any sleep nowadays when the last thing they hear before going to bed is a recital of the details of air disasters, automobile accidents, crimes, and brutal slayings. A nightcap of that kind would have been too strong to induce sleep 50 years ago. Public opinion is no longer aroused to action when the newspapers blandly report that several thousand Jews were systematically exterminated in gas chambers by anti-Semitics, or that 10,000 Christians were martyred because of their anti-communist convictions by Bella Kuhn or Chinese sadists. And I suppose William Guy Carr would go to prison in Germany for saying several thousand Jews. That's Holocaust denial. Isn't it to change the number from 6 million to several thousand?
Well, it's absolutely Holocaust denial. He could never go to Europe again.
Such horrors are now accepted as everyday occurrences. We are being rendered immune to the reactions we once experienced when violence of any kind came to our attention. We no longer are disturbed by the overthrow of established governments by force. If we were, we would have done something to stop what has been going on. People listen to those who continually cry, as they did in Spain, communism can never cause a revolution here. They listen to those who gave them a false sense of security. The majority of citizens are like children who hide their heads under the blankets when they fear danger. It should be remembered that pulling the bedclothes over one's head never saved a person from an assassin, a rapist, or an exploding bomb. And I always have everybody in around me tell me it'll never happen in America. Well, it has happened here, hasn't it?
It did happen here. It's over. It did happen here. We are a communist nation. They're just too stupid to realize it.
They're slaves who don't want to admit that they have chains.
That they don't understand their slavery. They don't know that they're slaves. They don't understand that they're in slavery. They don't understand that the entire communist every plank of the Communist Manifesto has been instituted here. They don't see the attack on their family because they're too ignorant to know how it was 60 years ago. That they don't know anymore what Western civilization and what Christian society is supposed to be. And that's because they don't read. Everything they think they know, they got from USA Today and CNN, and it's the propaganda of the Jew. That's all they ever got.
Cosmopolitan and MSNBC, you name it, they own it all. A few illustrations will show how psychological warfare worked in Spain. We must always remember that Lenin said, quote, part of the training of all revolutionary youths must consist of robbing a bank, blowing up a police station, and the liquidating of a traitor or a spy, end quote.
Now, if you look at the list, and we went over this a month or two ago, if you look at the list of prominent Israeli politicians, you'll see that they have all of these things on their resume.
Mm-hmm. They have an impressive resume of misery, death, violence, and terrorism. Not until a youth has been drained dry of the milk of human kindness and all feelings of sympathy is he qualified for party membership. This is a vastly different status from that of a fellow traveler. As the day chosen for the revolt drew near in Spain, the purveyors of pornographic literature and obscene pictures became so bold they took their stand at the entrance to churches and offered their wares to the congregations going in and coming out. The outside covers of these publications usually showed pictures of priests and nuns engaged in sexual hijinks. Mr. Edward Cohnblau, who was recognized as an authority in the Civil War in Spain, was so struck by this anti-clerical campaign that he wrote, quote, "Occasionally delegates of Protestant clergymen came to Loyalist Spain to investigate stories they had read of anti-clerical activities. These delegations were warmly received. Great pains were taken to convince them they had been badly misled. Special guides were detailed to show them around. They saw only what the communist authorities wanted them to see. After a day or two, they were hustled home, suitably impressed. But one day there was a slip-up. A delegation of clergymen stopped at a bookstall to admire some rare old volumes. Before the guide could prevent it, they saw also copies of La Traca and Bicarochas Clericales. The covers portrayed priestly orgies with semi-naked nuns. Both magazines were profusely illustrated with obscene pictures. Mr. Cohnblau commented, the delegates left in a huff.
Well, that's the real religious material the Jews love to put on the stores and bookshelves.
The situation in Spain between 1923 and 1936 was very similar to that which exists in Canada between the French and English-speaking population today. The Basque people have their own language, culture, and traditions, which date back into antiquity. They are deeply religious and very proud. Like many French Canadians, they believe they deserve national independence. To achieve this objective, they organized a separatist movement to liberate the Basque people from the rest of Spain. As was only natural, the plotters of the revolutionary movement in Spain didn't overlook such a situation. The Basque people were devout Roman Catholics. They believed they were justified in fighting for political independence if necessary. The vast majority, however, would never have knowingly affiliated with the Communist Party to achieve their goal. Yet that is exactly what happened. And that's what the Marxists would do. They will use separatists like that, and then when they're done with them, they'll kill them, won't they?
Well, absolutely. That they would, if the Marxists had won in Spain, the Basque people would have been an immediate target.
They would have gone the way of the kulaks in the Ukraine.
No doubt.
Marxist cells infiltrated into Basque society. They hid their real identity so well, they became the leaders of the separatists. Then, like the Judas goat, they led the Basques to slaughter. Operating under the banners of intense patriotism and religious fervor, the Basque leaders, President Aguirre, Geard, and Negrin, blended and beat into an unbelievable mass Christ's cross, the pistol of anarchism, and the sickle and hammer of communism. Then, when the revolt started, the masses were abandoned to their fate. Aguirre was head of the Basque state and Generalissimo of the Basque armies. He sat in his office in Bilbao, while hundreds of Catholic priests and other leaders of Basque society were systematically murdered. Their martyrdom naturally increased the hatred existing between the Basques and Spain. F.J. Olandrez wrote the foreword of the book, The Red Persecution in the Basque Country, written by Jose Echinendia. He said, when the day arrived, the Basque separatists, blind with passion, many of them forgetting their faith and their Catholic sentiments, felt closely and firmly united to the communists, to the atheists, and to the anarchists, and they launched into a war and made themselves responsible for slaughter and believed all means were licit, rebelliously ignoring the peremptory words of their religious leader, Pope Pius XI, as contained in his encyclical Divini Redemptoris. Communism is intrinsically perverse, and it cannot be admitted that those who wish to serve the Christian civilization may in any way cooperate with it. We're not going to see a pope speak like that today, are we?
Absolutely not, because the popes today know better. I mean,
they're all into liberation theology.
Well, liberation theology is very big in the Catholic Church, especially in Mexico and South America, and it's Catholicism that's been replaced. I'm not saying Catholicism belongs down there in the first place, but they have replaced South American and Mexican Catholicism with Marxism. That's what that's what liberation theology is.
And isn't that what Bezmenov warned about? He spoke about that they would take genuine religion and turn it into a politicized cult.
Well, right, and that's exactly what they've done here in America also.
And in black Protestant
churches, it's liberation theology. And don't, you know, the media was very deceptive with that Jeremiah Wright thing when that came out when Obama became a serious presidential candidate. And they said, oh, he's the exception. He's the exception. Well, no, he's not the exception. All of the Negroes in prison that were Protestants recognized Jeremiah Wright's rhetoric right away because they'd been hearing it for years in their own churches.
Absolutely. And if I were running for a political office and people said, oh, you're affiliated with Pastor Eli James, Bill Fink, they would say, oh, your preachers are hate mongers. We wouldn't hear the end of it, would we?
No, but Jeremiah Wright is basically, in many black community churches, for want of a worse term, that he's the norm.
Mm-hmm. He's the poster child of the black Protestant preacher.
Yes, he is. And I've seen it from a thousand Negroes that identified with him immediately.
One of them said that if Jesus is not for black power, then the black community should stop being for Jesus. That's what one of them said.
Well, right, exactly. And they have taken our God and they have remade him in their image. That's what people do. That's why you had a red-headed white Buddha in the 4th century B.C. in China that eventually became a stout, chubby little Chinese guy.
That's why I won't use the phrase black Christian.
Well, black Christian is an oxymoron. It's as bad as Jews for Jesus. It can't possibly be. It's an oxymoron.
They can't glorify our God.
Right. Satan, you can't have Satan for God. How could you have Jews for Jesus?
All right. How well some of our top-level statesmen should have remembered those words of wisdom when they tried to cooperate with Stalin during World War II. They weren't really our top-level statesmen, though. They were Jewish pawns and shills, weren't they?
Right, absolutely.
Another truth government leaders must never forget is the fact that communists and all other international groups are used by the Illuminati to further their own secret plans and ambitions. All right, chapter 14, Franco. Should we continue on with Franco?
I think we should probably leave it here and pick up 14 even next week because it's getting close to 90 minutes. We're not there yet, but...
All right.
It would be... I think it would be a cleaner break to start with 14 next week.
So America never needed a Bolshevik revolution or a Spanish-style revolution because we went the slow road and voluntarily accepted communism through our apathy, sitting back and letting it be forced on us.
Well, absolutely. And we underwent revolutions. They were just never called what they were. The sexual revolution, the feminist revolution.
Yeah, the counterculture movement.
Well, right. The entire counterculture movement was Bolshevik.
They should have just called it the counter-Christian movement or the Antichrist movement. And it's gotten progressively worse.
The Frankfurt School, our educational system was taken over. And it was a consolidation of the publishing companies. It was the sources that schools and school districts get their textbooks from. That this was don't think for a minute that this wasn't orchestrated by Jewish bankers and high level Jewish educators and academics. This certainly was orchestrated.
And I'd say right now we're in so deep that we're not getting out unless God returns and saves us.
Exactly. We can't fight our way out of this. We can't vote our way out of this. We can't fight our way out of this because we're not a we.
Mm-hmm.
We're 250 million individuals, and 249.9 million of them are absolutely blind and think they're free.
And those are the best kind of slaves, those that don't realize they're slaves.
Well, absolutely.
Since there's not going to be a slave revolt. But I'm just reading here Luke 18, and shall not God avenge his own elect, which cried day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? And I think that's a serious question being posed, since the Jews are doing such a great job destroying the faith of Jesus, destroying his ministry, and undoing the work of his apostles, that it's a question he had to pose. When I return, will my faith still be here in the earth?
Well, right, and it's not. I would have to say it's not. It's there's a very small segment of the population who is close or at least on the right track, but for the most part, the true faith is not here.
And if the Jews had their way about it, the true people would not be here. They'd kill us all today if they could, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. That they would eliminate every white man tomorrow in a minute if they had their way.
I told a friend of mine that if there was a button that you could push that would make all the white people just drop dead, the Jews would have carpal tunnel syndrome because they'd be pushing it so much.
Well, they'd be arguing over whether or not they want to get rid of the young blonde female so quickly.
But if they could, they'd probably kill every single white man today and take all the white women tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And the Jews, they will howl and moan about intermarriage and claim that it's reducing Jewish numbers, but that's just a pretense. It's a scam, I think. It's a hoax. Since intermarriage, it creates more of them and less of us. So they really like intermarriage, especially since they don't want to have to marry a hideous Jew female that looks like Joan Rivers.
Well, there are some Jews that are deceived into believing that they're a pure race. Don't get me wrong, there are.
And some of the Nazis thought that for a time, didn't they, that the Jews were a pure race?
Yes, they did.
But we know different.
Even Hitler was more or less led astray by that.
But today, we know better.
Well, we have a much better understanding of their history and the way they've mixed with just about every people in the world. That's why they appear to be a unique race. That they have the bad genes from every cesspool of human scum that's walking the face of the earth.
They have the negative qualities of all people and the redeeming qualities of none.
Well, that's a nicer way to say what I just said.
That they're basically a walking perversion, aren't they?
That's what they are, contrary to all men and a total perversion of the creation of Yahweh. And that's why they seek to do nothing but pervert it further.
And that's why God has to come back to take this world back from them, to take it back from the Nakash people, since Adam and Eve failed to do that.
And Adam is still failing to do it.
And if he doesn't come back, Satan will rule this world indefinitely, won't he?
Yes, sir.
So all we can say is come quickly.
That's it. We have no other alternative. We have to repent our way out of this. We can't fight our way out of it or vote our way out of it. It's not going to happen. We have to repent our way out of it and pray for his return when Babylon falls, and then it's our turn.
I think, though, if truly godly, righteous men stand up against evil, not even Satan himself could stop them. He did say that the gates of hell would not prevail against us, didn't he?
Exactly. But most of us would stand with the devil and hold the gates of hell up.
Exactly. Most people have opened the gates for the demons from hell.
But when the tares are gathered and thrown into the fire, an awful lot of Christian Zionists are going to be angry with God.
Well, that's because the God of the Bible is not the God they want him to be.
Well, of course not.
Okay. I've often said that they worship the God of their own imagination.
Basically, that's what it boils down to.
All right, then. So next week at 8 o'clock.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Yahweh bless. Thank you, sir.